What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Greetings, my name is Charlie Robinson. I am the author of a book called The Octopus of Global Control. What we're going to do is examine the book in a way that I was never able to do. I couldn't do an audiobook. It was too long. The book's 540 pages, and trying to convert it into an audiobook actually didn't work. I had too many words in it. So what we're going to do is break this down into several chapters, episodes. We're going to talk about it. The topics that I covered in the book when it was released in August of 2017 are still valid. They're very much important as far as our day-to-day lives, not just people living in America, but throughout the world. It's not a book that you have to start at chapter one and read all the way to the end. You can read it out of sequence. It doesn't really matter. It talks about eight tentacles of control, and I paint this picture of a global octopus. Now, the imagery of the octopus is not new. It's nothing that I created. Danny Castellaro wrote a book called The Octopus many years ago. It got him killed for it. Don't think I didn't realize that he was 44 when he wrote the book about an octopus and wound up getting murdered. I was also 44 when I wrote the book, and hopefully the same thing doesn't happen to me. But of course, I'm not exposing the Promise software, so maybe that'll keep me alive. But the reason why I chose the octopus is the reason why a lot of people that have written books or have talked about this have described this entity as being a lot like an octopus. If you look into, you know, the aspects of a real octopus, what you'll find is that they're very smart. They're very deceptive. Everybody knows that they can change colors, but they can also change textures. They can spray ink to make a quick getaway, or if you get too close to them, guess what? They've got a hidden beak that you can't see coming until it's too late, and they will tear you apart with it. They're smart. They're known to, according to scientific studies, to remember caves that they've been in a long, long time ago. They're able to navigate through mazes and things like that. They can stay and fight, or they can spray ink, change colors, and get away. And it's a perfect metaphor for what we as normal, rational, decent human beings face on a day-to-day basis against these people that are in high positions of power. And once again, I was not the person that came up with the concept of the octopus, and neither was Danny Castellaro for that matter. But you have the mayor of New York City, John Francis Hyland, talking about the sprawling octopus and its tentacles being in every aspect of our society, from the media to the courthouses to the education system and all of these things. And this was a This was a guy that was talking about this in 1922. So this is nothing new. It's been, at least in the United States, over 100 years. And unfortunately, it might not be going away anytime soon. So what we're going to do is we're going to treat this as like a television season, right? Season one is going to be the octopus of global control. It'll evolve after that when we get to season two. We'll move on to different topics. But the things that are covered in this book, they're relevant now, and I think they'll be relevant in the future as well. I did something a little unusual with the formatting of the book, and that was that I brought in quotes from over 500 different people that had had some role or some sort of interesting opinion or take on some of the most important events in our modern history. So you're going to hear quotes from people like the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. You'll hear from the Bushes and the Clintons and the Obamas and people like that. You also hear from George Carlin, Bill Hicks, Joe Rogan, you know, guys that see the world a little bit differently. And part of this whole idea for the book came out of a busted Thanksgiving dinner that I had. I think a lot of people will relate to this. This was many years ago. I made the mistake of bringing up 9/11 at a Thanksgiving dinner table with my in-laws at the time, and I watched the table turn on me. They were not pleased. They didn't want to talk about this. They didn't like what I was having to say. What I was talking about was conflicting with the way they saw the world, and they didn't like it. And they didn't like me messing with that. And I looking back on that, I can understand it. But what I took away from that Thanksgiving dinner was that I got destroyed in my argument. And the reason was I wasn't prepared for it. And what I came to realize afterwards was that, you know, the people at that table, they looked at me and they thought, you don't have any sort of expertise on this. You don't know this. You don't know enough about this. You're not an architect. You're not an engineer. What are you talking about, Building 7 coming down at free fall speed? I mean, who are you? You're nobody. You don't know this. And they were right. I'm not an architect. I'm not an engineer. Frankly, I don't think you need to be one in order to watch Building 7 come down. But they were correct in their assessment of my level of authority to be able to talk about these topics. So what I realized was that, you know, what I really wanted to do was say, well, fine, you don't believe me. What about this guy? What if I bring in Richard Gage, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth? He's an architect. He's an engineer. What if you heard it from him? Would it change your mind? You know, you mentioned the, you know, New World Order and things like that, and people roll their eyes and they go, get out of here with that New World Order nonsense. And you say, well, hang on a second. I'm not the one saying, I'm not the one making up this term. You know, David Rockefeller's talked about this many times. George H.W. Bush mentioned the New World Order over 200 times in public speeches just in his 4 years. You've got Bill Clinton talking about the New World Order. You have the Pope talking about it. You have Margaret Thatcher talking about it. You have Angela Merkel. You have Tony Blair. You have everybody in positions of power talking about it. I'm not crazy. I'm not making this up. They're talking about it. Would it change your mind if you heard their words, if you heard them talking about it? Would that change your mind? And of course, the answer is, well, yeah, of course. Yeah, it would change my mind. So that led me to the formatting of the book. And that was to bring in the quotes from all of these people. Forget me. You know, my voice is in there. Clearly, I wrote it. But listen to what they have to say. They'll tell you the plan. They'll tell you what they're doing. Now, some people think that there's some sort of obligation or some sort of compunction, there's some sort of reason that they have to tell you what they're going to do before they do it, some sort of cosmic karma type thing. And that might be true, because it turns out over and over again that if you listen to what these people say, they will tell you what they're going to do before they do it. And that's a very unusual thing to think about. But so I felt like if I was able to take their voices, I was able to put their words into the book, and have them punctuate what I said. I decided not to put footnotes in it. I decided I would use these quotes as footnotes. They were going to back up my story. They were going to emphasize what I was talking about. And it's worked really well. And I think that the thing that people have really enjoyed the most about the book is the fact that you hear all of these voices. There's 700 quotes from 500 different people. It's from Adolf Hitler to, you know, Abby Martin, you know, I mean, everybody's in there. So it's a wide variety. But the downside to tackling and talking about and writing about topics such as these is that it's rather dark. You know, the plan is not a good one for us, and it can be a bit much. So what I did to lighten the mood of the book was I injected my dark sense of humor into the book. I think I always felt like it worked well when Jon Stewart did that on The Daily Show. He would tell you a story. He would show you some news story that was ridiculous. He would laugh about it. He would make fun of it. He would do it in a way that was lighthearted. But you still got the point. You still understood what the message of that story was. You were laughing at it, but you were... It was getting into your brain somehow. So I felt like if we're going to talk about these topics, talking about global enslavement of humanity and things like that, you're talking about really bad people doing unspeakable things, you got to kind of pepper it with some humor. So you'll see that in the book. You're going to get that in the audio version of this. And this is not meant to be the audiobook. It's going to be it's going to have a component of that, but it's also going to be, you know, it's going to be me giving you sort of a behind the scenes. I'm going to drag in some current events and tie them to what I talked about in 2017. I think it works well for everyone. This is a book that will age well. And the reason is that some of the plans, some of the events that we've seen back in history or the current events that we're talking about now will be repeated in the future. Because what I've come to discover is that the people that are running this world, yes, they're evil and they've got a plan, but they're not very creative. They tend to run the same plan and the same plays over and over again. So because of that, what winds up happening is that you get to a point where there's a bit of pattern recognition, where you can hear people on television, politicians mostly, saying words that you've heard before, saying phrases that you've heard before. So if you hear them talking about, you know, we've got to go into Iran, they have, you know, weapons of mass destruction or this, this, and you go, where have I heard that before? Oh, yeah, they used that same line when they were trying to sell us Iraq in 2003 or Afghanistan in 2001 or the first Gulf War or you name it. So you'll start to see these strategies or these terms used over and over again. And part of the reason why these terms are used over and over again is that the people that are telling you this, the people that are in positions of high power in government, they're all connected. They're all going to the same organizations. They're all learning the same thing. They're all saying the same thing. And you will come to understand that the reason why they're saying the same thing and reading the same script and is because the people that are really in charge above them are giving them the script to read. So what we're going to do, we're going to work through this book. We're going to go topic by topic, much like the book. When you listen to this podcast, you can pick whatever episode you want to listen to. It's not going to matter. You can play them out of order. None of that will really matter all that much. But so let's get into it. To begin with, the book was broken down into 8 components, one for each of the tentacles of the octopus. And those are military control, governmental control, covert control, physical control, financial control, media control, spiritual control, and scientific control. The truth is, most of what we've been told is an elaborate lie. It's been concocted over the decades, centuries by people in positions of power that have a vested interest in keeping us stupid and keeping them in the know. It works very well to control humanity, which of course is the plan. Part of it is self-imposed ignorance. You know, we have the ability to go out and seek the truth, but many of us choose not to do that. It's very hard to do that. You have to prioritize your life. What am I going to do about this? Great, I find out some new information about some maniacs that are running the world, but now what? What do you want me to do about it? I'm just one person. I'm just this guy that works at this company, and I go to my job every day and I sit at my desk, and what do you want me to do about it? Well, maybe your role is just to wake up people around you. Maybe your role is to write a book or do a documentary or whatever. There's plenty of things that we can do. And what I've learned over the years is that, you know, I approached this, I came to writing this book kind of almost as an accident, really. I had been on a diving trip in Thailand in 2007, and a friend of mine gave me a book called Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and that changed my life. It's written by a guy named John Perkins, and he was what he described as an economic hitman. He worked for a company called Maine, which is the equivalent of like a Halliburton these days, or Bechtel, a multinational engineering firm. What he did was his job was to go to foreign countries and governments and get them to sign on for massive infrastructure projects. So in the case of Ecuador, he would go there and speak with the president and try to convince them that they needed to build a hydroelectric power plant in their country. He explained to them, this is how much it would cost. This is how much revenue it would generate from the electricity that it produces, that the people that lived in these villages would now have electricity. Their kids would learn to read at night with the lights on. And isn't this going to be great? And yeah, we'll put a little bit of money in your pocket and that's fine. And because you're the president, we'll take care of you. And they would sign on for this, but they would say, well, what about the money? You know, it's really expensive and we don't have the money to front the don't. And John Perkins would say, don't worry about that. We've got that taken care of. The IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank, they've agreed they'll take, you're good for it. And that money would flow from the IMF and the World Bank to John Perkins' company called Maine. And they would build this hydroelectric power plant and it wouldn't pencil out. The revenues generated from it was never enough to cover the cost, the debt that they owed on it. And that was by design, of course. Ecuador didn't know that, but John Perkins did. And once they fell behind in their payments, they would enslave them. They would say, well, you owe us a lot of money and we can work this out one way or another, but why don't we do this? Why don't we have you either, you can vote our way in a UN resolution, or you can privatize your lumber industry and sell it to our buddies, or you can allow us to put a U.S. military base in your country or something. We'll figure out a way. And so as I'm reading this book in 2007, I'm living and working in Las Vegas in new home sales. And I realized that what John Perkins was talking about was that the plan that these global bankers were using, this is extending credit to people and in their case, countries that can't afford it, waiting for them to fall behind on their payments and then taking back tangible assets. In this case, it might be their lumber industry or something like that. And as I'm selling, I'm working in real estate in Las Vegas, I'm selling new homes, I'm realizing, oh my God, this is the same scam. It's just on a smaller scale. The banks are issuing mortgages to people that have no business with them so that they can buy tangible assets, meaning houses. When they fall behind in their payments, what happens? They take back the house. And I thought, oh my God, I'm a part of this. And I didn't even know it. And that woke me up. You know, I'd already know, at that point in 2007, I was well aware that 9/11 was not as it appeared to be. I had major questions. I was starting to dig a little bit into these topics, but that woke me up to the fact that that I was somehow a part of this, and I had a tremendous amount of guilt because of that. I didn't obviously I didn't force people to take out mortgages or anything like that, but I was selling houses and they were getting approved for them and they thought that they were qualified and I thought they were qualified. And next thing you know, the market turned and all those people that I had sold houses to wound up losing them in bankruptcy and short sales and things like that, foreclosures. And I felt bad. I felt legitimately bad. I lost two houses myself, so I was drinking the Kool-Aid. And after years of digging into this information and trying to figure out what it is, I mean, what is really going on here? Living in Las Vegas and understanding this banking made me feel a little bit like I was at the casino, you know, a little bit like these are games. Financial games that are rigged, and you know, they don't build those casinos, aren't built by winners, right? They're built by all the people that lost, all the people that are bad at math. And I realized that I was involved in this, and that I was that this is how it works. This is how the financial scam works. And you start to read about, you know, you see the movie or read the book, The Big Short. I mean, a lot of people went to the movie theaters and watched The Big Short and thought this is a really great fictional movie. It was a documentary as far as I was concerned. I was seeing the same things, the things that were happening in that movie. I was involved. I mean, I had the exact same experience that those guys did. And so after a couple years of this, guilt and trying to understand what's going on, I had a very simple conversation with my mother one day, and I had explained to her, you know, some new conspiracy that I had discovered and had been turned onto. And she said, that's great. You know, that's interesting. But what are you going to do with all this information that you have? And I didn't have an answer. It had honestly never occurred to me I had to do anything with this information. I felt like I had just been an observer, but not really. I didn't have a role in it. So after a while of thinking how I wanted to approach this, I set out to write this book. And I did it in total secrecy. Nobody knew about it, not even my wife. She found out about it when the first shipment of the books arrived at my house. I was not there to intercept the books. She opened up the box, saw all these books, flipped it over on the back, saw my picture on the back, and she promptly threw me out of the house for 2 days. She considered that to be a form of cheating, you know, emotional cheating, I guess. I don't know. I could see her point, but still, hey, listen, I don't have a secret family and a secret double life in Utah. I mean, you should be happy. I mean, if the worst that happens is that your husband is cheating on you by writing a book, you know, in the middle of the night when you're not around and when you're sleeping. I mean, you should be so lucky. But anyway, so this book, that's how it came. I just want people to understand sort of why I wrote it and where it came from. It's a desire to try and figure this out, to try and understand what are we doing? What are we up against, you know? And what can we do to change things, to make sure that this never happens again. And, what I learned through all of this is that the truth is very elusive. And my favorite quote from the book was written by a guy, or was spoken by a guy named Stephen Bassett. He's the executive director of Paradigm Research Group. I'm going to start this whole series off with this one quote because I think it sets the tempo for what we're going to be talking about. And it goes like this. Imagine if the truth was a huge jigsaw puzzle, a big box with 20,000 pieces, and it is the truth, the absolute truth. It is a picture of the world as it really is. You come into this world, you get an education, you are handed this box, and the idea is to put all the pieces together. And if you put all the pieces together on this huge table, it will be the truth about the world that you live in. So you set about to do that. All good, a wonderful thing, except there is a problem. It turns out that the government that you are living under has made a decision to interfere with this truth process. It's a political decision being made for political reasons to serve the state, almost never the citizens. So the government has taken a whole bunch of those pieces out of your box and has thrown them away. They're missing. Well, that's a problem. But it gets worse. they've grabbed a bunch of pieces from another box, another puzzle, and thrown them into your box to your puzzle. And now you have to put this thing together with an idea that what you're going to find is the truth. That is an almost impossible situation, and it is extremely effective to serve the state. So, we got our box. We got a bunch of pieces. We're going to try and put this together. We may get it. We may not. But if everybody puts their heads together, we got some really smart people out there, and everybody brings their pieces to the table, we might be able to figure this out. We might be able to put it together in a way that allows us to get a fairly good idea of what we're going up against. So, what is the truth? You know, what do they say? The truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. Philip K. Dick said, "Truth, she thought, as terrible as death, but harder to find."
Yeah,
ain't that the truth? Let's take a break from the show just for a minute so I can tell you about our sponsors, Scribd. If you are into audiobooks or ebooks or magazines or anything, you have got to get this service. It's $9.99 a month. You can join free for 30 days and cancel whenever you want. You have unlimited access to thousands of books. You got books on conspiracies, books on UFOs, JFK, Bigfoot, whatever you're into, they've got them there, not to mention all the magazines. It's 33% cheaper than Audible. You got access to more books, for audiobooks from major publishers. They're unlimited. You can listen to or read as much as you want. The link for Scribd is in the description box below. Anything that you sign up for with them helps to benefit the show, and we certainly do appreciate that. And if you're into ebooks and audiobooks like I am, then you're probably also into documentaries. And CuriosityStream is our other sponsor. They have thousands of documentaries. They're award-winning, they're exclusives, they have originals. You can watch them anytime you want, anywhere you want. High definition quality, unlimited streaming of thousands of shows. You can stream it on your laptop, your TV, your phone, your tablet. You can even watch it offline if you want. Yearly subscription, $19.99. If you break it down to a month, they've got it for $2.99 a month. That's nothing. If you like it in high definition 4K, they also have that available for a little bit more. So the link to CuriosityStream is also in the description box. Take a look. Sign up for these services if you like them and you stick with them. Our show benefits from it. We certainly do appreciate that. I like these two sponsors a great deal because they're both in the business of providing us with additional information from a variety of sources. And you've got to love that. Thank you so much for supporting my show, and thanks for supporting the sponsors as well. In order to fully understand the reasons for the dysfunction in our society, you must pull back far enough to get a view of the entire picture. Without this expanded perception, the problems that we face seem sort of random and disjointed, but they are anything but. They are deliberate. They've been seeded decades in advance, and sort of a planned functional obsolescence of humanity, if you will. And, you know, for a lot of us, we have heard the stories of a small group of people running our world, you know, like some shadowy group of plutocrats flying around and their private jets and, you know, lighting cigars with flaming $100 bills and running multinational corporations and controlling the media and manipulating the money supply and influencing governments and generating chaos and provoking wars in order to further their agenda. Well, that's all true. I mean, I don't know about the lighting flaming $100 bills to light your cigar, but the rest of that is very true. This is happening. This is the Rockefellers. This is the Rothschilds. They'll tell you what they're doing. They'll tell you what they are. David Rockefeller mentioned in his autobiography, he said that he's been accused, I'm not going to read the quote directly, but that he had been accused of being an internationalist, and that his plan was to, you know, that he and his family had set about to rig the world and control the game to benefit them and to create a one world government. He finishes it off by saying, if these are the charges, then I stand guilty and I'm proud of it. That's from his autobiography. So what we have come to learn is that a lot of these people want to tell you what they're doing. We just need to listen to it. If you think you're going to hear it on your nightly news, George H.W. Bush talking about the New World Order, or David Rockefeller at Bilderberg in 1991 thanking the media for holding up their end of the bargain of keeping their mouths shut, because without them, we could never be able to put our plans for a New World Order in place. You're never going to hear that on your nightly news. Just forget about it. But he said it. It's very real. But we've come to this weird place where we feel like if we don't see it on our nightly news, then it's not true. Or, consequentially, if you don't see it on your nightly news, then it didn't happen. And both of those are very dangerous, because the media in the United States, frankly in the world, but specifically in the United States, the media is one of the most dangerous groups of companies, the most dangerous component of this octopus, because they can make the truth look like lies, and they can make lies look like the truth, and they can start wars with their words. They do it all the time. It becomes a matter, you get that echo chamber going, and you start to have questions about whether or not we should invade another country tomorrow, next week, or next month. Those are your only options. Forget the fact that there's a fourth option, which is mind your own goddamn business and stop trying to invade other countries. I mean, they never talk about that, right? So why is that? Why don't you hear that as an option on the in the nightly news? Well, we'll get into that later, but part of it has to do with the ownership structure of the media itself. Felix Frankfurter, who was a Supreme Court justice in 1952, said, "The real rulers in Washington are invisible and exercise power from behind the scenes." I think a lot of us are waking up to that. I think a lot of us know that that is the way the world works. It's not fair. You go to the ballot box every 4 years and you cast your vote for some idiot who tells you all the right things. And you think that you're doing something, and you think that that person's going to go to work for you, but that person's a puppet. They're not really there. The invisible rulers, that's what Felix was talking about. They are behind the scenes. It's in their best interest to not be known. They bring in cutouts and puppets and defective human beings known as politicians, and they give them what they want. They find what that weak spot is. If a politician, hey, maybe that's the guy who just wants to be famous. All right, fine, we'll give you fame. Maybe he's the guy that wants to get rich. Oh, well, we can help you out with that. Don't worry, we'll tell you which stocks to buy on, you know, for companies that are about to make a big announcement. You make a bunch of money that way. Maybe you like pretty girls. We can hook that up for you. Maybe you like young boys, really young boys. Well, they've got that too. But whatever it is that you want, they'll give it to you. But it comes at a price. And once you accept it, they've got you. And the people that we see on our nightly news and the people that we vote for to put into office, those people are damaged. That's why they get into this line of work. You don't become a politician because you're the best and the brightest. You become a politician because you're a psychopath that craves power. You like to tell people what to do. You like to boss other people around. You like to make decisions. You like to feel important. And those people are defective at their core. And the rest of us wind up watching this theater, this political theater, scratching our heads, trying to figure out, why are all these politicians such screw-ups? Why are these guys that are running our world such maniacs? And the reason, the answer that we've come to find out is that it's done by design. You see, you don't want a good man in a high position of office because that person can't be corrupted. So what you want is the most defective, the most corruptible, the most broken human being you can possibly find. Preferably somebody that's, you know, an alcoholic or a pedophile or something like that. And once you've got that, once you've got the goods on them, then you control them for a long time. Back in the 50s, you know, it might be that you'd find out a guy was cheating on his wife, or, and you could use that as leverage to get him to do what you want to do. In the 70s, maybe it was that a guy was a closeted homosexual and you had that information on him. But these things, you know, times change and everything. Now what we've seen, and it's been brought to the forefront quite prominently with Jeffrey Epstein, is that what they really want in positions of power are pedophiles. Because once they get the goods on you for that, they've got you forever. Think that that doesn't happen? Happens all the time. So in fact, it's the way things get done. Prominent pedophiles have been rising to positions of power for forever. Dennis Hastert in the United States is a prime example of that. That guy was three steps away from becoming the president, and he was a notorious pedophile for 40 years, raping kids on his wrestling team, getting blackmailed for it. So this is the dark underbelly of this octopus that we talk about. And, you know, you don't rise to positions of power. You don't rise up the food chain in politics by being nice, honest, and fair. You get there by force, deception, and influence. You get there by violence if necessary. You get there through blackmail and extortion. This takes planning and funding and patience and practice and mastery of how to use fear to control other people. And, you know, those people that are running our world are playing a very different game than the rest of us. Well, frankly, most of us don't even know we're playing a game. We don't even know that we're a part of this. And so that puts us at a severe disadvantage. Obviously, we get exploited through this by those controlling the game. And I know it sounds far-fetched. I know it sounds a bit crazy to think that all these people are so evil and so wicked that they're controlling us. But unfortunately, this is the way it works. And it's up to us to understand it. We owe it to ourselves to know how this works. We've gone far too long burying our heads in the sand, pretending like we don't, you know, that we don't want to know, or that we're too busy, or that we've got other things going on. Meanwhile, these people count on that. So, one of my goals when I wrote the book or for this podcast is that we wake as many people up as possible to what's happening so that it doesn't happen again. We can't change the past. We can't change what's happened. We can't change that we invaded Iraq on a bunch of bullshit with weapons of mass destruction, and he had yellow cake uranium in the first Gulf War when they were taking babies out of the incubator. These are lies. These are proven lies. We can't change that. But what we can do is educate ourselves to the point where we recognize the lies so that if we start to hear them again, we won't fall for it. We will rise up collectively and say, no more, we're not doing this. You know, you've used this lie before. You've told us about this before. We've got to get them before they get us. If the next, you know, if we don't do this, there might be a mushroom cloud over New York City. All of these scare tactics, and they work very well until you know the plan. Then they don't work at all. So if we can expose this, we can talk about all these very difficult topics. We can do it in a way. We're going to have some fun with this. You know, I mean, as fun as you can have with this, with these topics. You have to, you know, they've got a plan. They've got a plan for us. We need a plan for dealing with them. Terence McKenna, who is an American writer, a philosopher, and an ethnobotanist, he said, if you don't have a plan, you become part of somebody else's plan. And he's right. And for many years, we've been a part of somebody else's plan. But what we can do is we can expose their plan and make sure that we don't find ourselves a useful idiot participating in this. We all do to a certain extent. I mean, we're part of the governmental system and we're part of the banking system and we're part of the education. There's a certain level of this that we're going to have to tolerate. But an understanding of what their plan is extremely helpful for to us, because once you know what they're going to do, you can make moves in your life to remove yourself from the situation. You can get out of the way of it. You might not be able to save everybody. Think of it like this. Remember the 2004 tsunami in Indonesia and Thailand? What they said was a lot of the people were out on the beach and they were just looking at the water. The water had receded so far away, a mile out, like it had never done before. And everyone walked to the beach and they were looking around, taking pictures and videos, saying, isn't this crazy how far the water has receded? Not knowing that what that means is that a tsunami was coming in. The water gets sucked out first, and then it comes in. For those that knew what that sign meant with the water receding, they knew, don't go to the beach, don't take selfies, don't do any of that stuff. Get your ass to high ground as fast as you can, because when you see that, you know what's coming. And for millennia, we, the common serfs, we haven't understood the plan. We didn't recognize the signs when we saw them. But what we're going to do is we're going to get ourselves to a point where we know when we hear a politician say something on TV, we know what that means. We know that what they're saying, we look back on that tsunami metaphor and we realize this is what's coming. I've heard this before. I've heard maybe it's the same guy saying the same thing. But once they say this, it means that. And once you figure this out, once you translate what it is that when they're talking, what it is they're actually meaning and what they mean to be saying, then you can position yourself to not get hurt by it. You can position your family and friends. You're not going to be able to save everybody. You know, when that tsunami came, only the people that had enough experience recognizing the signs were able to get away, and everyone else, unfortunately, learned the hard way. So we're gonna learn the signs. We're gonna hear them talk about the plan they have for humanity. We're gonna hear them talk about the things that they've done in the past, where they want to go with it. Agenda 2030. Don't let people tell you that that's fake. That's a real thing. That's something that the Rockefellers through the United Nations have concocted for humanity, and it's going to impact all of us. And if you don't know about that, you'll walk right into it voluntarily, most likely. So we're going to get into these topics, and so strap in. You know, it's going to be a bumpy ride, but I promise you this: if you let go of your fear of what people think about you believing these things, and you educate yourself as best you can, you'll be in a much better spot to deal with the future. You'll be able to position yourself and your family in a way that avoids a lot of this chaos and headache. Not all of it, you know, that's unrealistic. But for us to move forward, we've got to learn from the past. And so much of our past, so much of what has really happened in our world has been hidden from us by people that have a vested interest in keeping it quiet. They talk about the Vatican having all of these books in their basements and things like that. That's knowledge that they don't want the rest of us to have. But they don't have a monopoly on that. They don't have a right to withhold information that's vital to us. So what we're going to do is we're going to educate ourselves on it. Fuck them. We don't need them. We're going to do it. We're going to expose them. And when you take this information in the future and you start to talk to your friends and family about it, we make sure you have what I didn't have at that Thanksgiving dinner. You're going to make sure you have a deep understanding of how this game is set up, why it's rigged, what you can do to remove yourself from playing the game, and then in the end, how we can take the whole system down. Because I've never seen a system of control that has been set up that is so effective, so evil, and yet so many of us are blind to it. You know, the time for making excuses about not knowing this stuff is over. We've got the internet. we've got YouTube. We've got podcasts. We've got people talking to one another about some very interesting topics. They cannot silence everybody. This information no longer has to be stuck in the basement of the Vatican or in some Library of Alexandria or someplace like that. This information is available to all of us. It's up to us, though. We do have a responsibility here, and that is nobody's going to teach you this in high school. Nobody's going to educate you about this in college, especially in college these days. God forbid you don't have your safe space. Got to have your safe space. Can't have teachers talking about things that make me feel bad about myself. Well, you're going to need a big-time safe space after you get done with this, because the information that we're going to discuss is it's heavy duty, man. It's the type of stuff that, you know, you might have to put the computer down for a little bit and go take a walk around the block to sort of absorb it and process it all. And like I said, some of it is very dark, but that's okay, because we're adults and we can't hide behind the fact that this might upset us. We're going to have to take some responsibility for ourselves as far as the education system goes. God knows you can't leave that up to the schools these days. They will you'll get nothing from them. So here's a little clip from something a little bit more timely. This is from The Matrix, actually. This is Morpheus is saying to Neo, "The Matrix is everywhere. It's all around us. Even now, in this very room, you can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth." To which Neo responds, "What truth?" "That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage, into a prison that you cannot taste or see or touch, a prison for your mind." Who in the hell would have thought that a science fiction movie from 20 years ago would have had such relevant information as far as the explanation about what it is that we're actually living in? And Carl Sagan, the writer, said, "One of the saddest lessons of history is this. If we've been bamboozled long enough, we tend to reject any evidence of the bamboozle. We're no longer interested in finding out the truth. The bamboozle has captured us. It's simply too painful to acknowledge, even to ourselves, that we've been taken. Once you give a charlatan power over you, you almost never get it back." Well, I think it's time for us to get it back.